All right, we have another question. Lon Garrison, hi, Lon.
Good evening, everybody, and thanks for putting this on. I think this is long overdue. As you know, I'm associated with the school board in part of my life, and which has given me a unique perspective on how to view Sitka and what Sitka means to certainly myself, and I think to folks who live here and who are raising children here. So one of the things that I've been thinking of for several years as we've dealt with deficits and had to try to fill the gap between those deficits as we go into the budget season and then as we go through the year is how do we plan for that, and how do we set priorities as a community in terms of where we want to be? I think that Mr. Paxton's comment about, you know, how we'd gone through a comprehensive plan and it took some time and there was some time spent on planning and visioning where we want to go is a very valid comment for today, and that we need to continue to do that and to think about what the community is going to look like next year, what it's going to look like in 5 years, what it's going to look like in 10 or 20 years. And then the idea that Mr. Bevin said that, the delta between our kind of in-house revenue and the external revenue is what's really putting the squeeze on us. And I can tell you in my dealings with the state legislature and my experience across the nation with other school boards and the federal government, that money is rapidly disappearing, and that's where we are feeling a major pinch there. And that means that we've got to be more creative and more self-reliant. And again, that goes back to how do we decide what those priorities are going to be for our community, and how are we going to make ends meet? And I think this conversation tonight is a very good beginning on that, and it's not going to be an easy conversation. It's going to be a very difficult conversation because you have people that are feeling the pain no matter where you're at. But if we want a community that, you know, values education, has good facilities that provide good services to its citizenry, we have to take a look at what it's going to cost us. And I think Mr. Stein's observation and a bit of that research to show that as a community, we really have not spent very much in terms of the millage rate compared to a lot of other places in the state and compared to most of the United States. We have, frankly, I think, been a bit spoiled in that, you know, a lot of the income that we get has come from outside. And now that's coming due. And we have to face that, and it's not going to be easy. But I know when I look at it through the glasses that I have to use for the school board, and the priority I need to place on what it's going to take the school district to get a kid across the finish line with a diploma that means something and an opportunity for their future, is pretty serious business. And it's kind of like poking your finger into a balloon, you know. You do one thing, and there's a consequence for that. So I think we have to have this big picture thought to some degree and figure out where we're going to go. Taxes aren't going to solve it completely, and cutting services, cutting spending is not going to solve it. It's going to be a combination of a number of different things. And everything that we can do, I think, to make ourselves more self-reliant will serve us well in the future, because there's going to be fewer and fewer that are going to be interested in helping us out, especially the federal and state government.
All right. Thanks very much, Lon. Does any of our panelists have a reaction to that? John?
We were talking about some of this, the initiatives that the current assembly is taking. The land trust and affordable housing. What affordable housing does for folks and families is it allows more money to go into the economy rather than into real estate. And so I think that's a great initiative because that preserves the spending power of families and they will buy local and that will help boost the economy. The other thing I think sort of interesting, people have talked to me about, oh my gosh, we've gone crazy. We're spending $150 million on the Blue Lake Dam. That's not a good thing. Well, I went back. I asked CETA to come up with how much heating fuel we use. And the latest numbers that they had was in 2006 for heating fuel. It was a calculated number. 3,500,000 gallons of heating fuel was used in the municipality. Do we have another source of heat? We do. It's going to be Blue Lake. At $4 a gallon, where it is now, or three, but at $4 a gallon, that's $14 million that's exported collectively from this town every year just to heat space. And if we can recapture that with heat pumps and utilize to the best extent our new hydroelectric powers and future hydroelectric, we can capture that $14 million every year, or not are part of it, because we won't be exporting that money to buy fuel from outside. Just a thought.
Yeah, Lon brought up an interesting point about how do we become more self-reliant. And there are a number of business owners in the audience, and I wondered if any of them, if we could maybe turn the conversation a little bit to finding ideas to help us become more independent. I know in our on our Facebook page, that seems to be what people are suggesting the most. They're saying build a bowling alley, ice rink, and give our businesses a break so they could stay in Sitka. Invest in our police and fire departments, an ice rink and a bowling alley so kids have things to do. Advertise the Alaska Raptor Center more. A better way to use our city taxes would be to rip up all the pavement and use concrete for our roads. Invest in a healthy and safe community. And use sin taxes for school funds. It used to be like that in the 60s. Do you have somebody back there, Emily? Yeah, we have a question, then we'll come to you next, Gus. Hi, Megan.
Megan Pasternak. I just wanted to expand a little bit on the sales tax and property tax exemptions. I'm not very far from signing up for that myself, but I'm not going to because I use those services that money funds. And people say to me, oh, well, there are some of the older people or the bicyclists, they'll say, I don't use the roads. And, you know, that's not true. How do you think your groceries get to town from the barges? How do you think the people that serve you get to work? You know, we all use the roads, whether you drive or not. And it just doesn't make sense to me that the exemptions, because I don't know how much... overall, is it the drop in a bucket? Maybe it wouldn't, you know, if everybody was paying the same tax, it wouldn't be that much more and add to the coffers. But I just, it's one of those things that's just kind of stuck in my craw. So, and then another thing that's not on this subject was our city permanent fund. When do we start dipping into it and using it? What do we call a rainy day?
We use it every year.
You use the interest, correct?
Yeah,
but not the main.
Yeah, that's affirmative. To try to do otherwise, you would never get that done. You're never going to pave Crescent Hall either. No, nothing, no comment.
Mark, what is the permanent fund? Do you happen to know what that number is right now?
About $17 million.
And what do we receive in income from it?
I think by ordinance, we are allowed to take out 7%. Is that 7%. Oh, Mike Reif is saying 6%. Is that, can I count your fingers from here? 6%. Yeah. If I, could I make a quick response on the tax issue, Rob?
Yes, please.
As we talk about how we move forward, I think we've focused in a lot of time talking about taxes, but I think if you look at sustaining city services as a three-legged stool, it's much more than taxes. I think we have to look at the legs of the stool being a strong economy, which right now, that's a wobbly leg. effective and efficient city and borough services, and citizen investment. And citizen investment is taxes, and I think that's what we've been really focused on for the up to now in this discussion. But I think there are other things that are more optimistic and forward-thinking as we look at how do we grow our economy. So we have those revenues coming in. City and borough services, are there other ways of doing this so we're not growing so rapidly? What efficiencies can we make there?
All right. We had a question.
Yes. What seems to be the biggest barrier to making the water resources a meaningful income stream? You know, it seems to me there's been some hit or miss things that have come up where maybe some people or some organizations with questionable financial background have been attempting to start a bottling company. But it seems to me there could be a meaningful 5, 10, 20-year method of how to use the water resources in a meaningful manner. And I'd just like some responses to that.
Gary, you want to talk? Well, let me preface before you say, Gary White could probably talk to that. My view is there's been a lot of work by the Sawmill Cove Industrial Park, Gus, trying to get closure on that. We have not been able to, but if the day ever occurs that we sell bulk water, we're all of a sudden going to be having the challenge of managing success. And I can tell you managing success is more challenging than managing failure. I don't know if we're any closer now than we were 5 years ago, Gary, but I know a lot of people have spent a lot of time trying to make that happen.
Gary White, yeah, I saw you sinking down in your seat during that question, but.
So we are still working towards that to make it a reality. Actually, I spent most of the day today working with our partners in this, True Alaska Bottling. They're in town for most of the day. They've got their other outside investors here as well, and you know, they're always telling us that they're one step closer. And I feel like after today, we're one step closer by listening to the investors that are coming in and talking to us and having real constructive conversations on how do we do this? How do we actually build infrastructure to get water from our resource, put it on a ship, get it to someplace else? And can we, what types of ships are there? We've never really had those conversations. We've always been told stories, but we're getting into more of dealing with shipping consultants, and we're dealing with consultants that work on how to set the infrastructure up. So there are some movements going along, but it takes a lot of capital, and frankly, the economics of it have always been kind of tough. But as water resources are shrinking around the globe, and we have this resource, I think we have the ability to make it happen. And Mr. Paxton's right. Once it does happen, then we're going to have to figure out how we deal with a great deal of water, or money's coming in for it. Also, on the bottling side, we're working with another venture with my fancy shirt here. This is another group that's coming to town. They've been marketing this brand right here all over Southern California and into Mexico, and they're going to be making a pitch to the Sawmill Cove Board here next month to try to do bottling. So we're always still moving forward. We're always looking ahead, but it's a very tough enterprise to make happen.
All right. Thanks, Gary.
If my middle daughter, Sydney Wallace, was here, she would say, Dad, why don't people care about me and Mike and other people who are investing in our town? They're in the tourism business. Why don't they care about us as much as we do the fine arts camp and the beautiful auditorium that my grandkids and my daughter Shelley conducted a play tonight, by golly, for her fifth and sixth graders. And so you've got to always do it in a rational and proper kind of way. But I believe that the administration, in assembly have to lead with passion on trying to expand our economy. CETA only happened when we closed the mill. We never had CETA before. CETA, and now we've got the Sawmill Cove Industrial Sites, which are two different entities in town that, in my view, sort of behind the scenes, but doing that heavy lifting. But it also has to be, you have to have leadership And my view is that our new administrator has the personality and the talent to be a really outstanding spokesman for our city, whether he's talking about dealing with the complex business of getting government and federal funding or doing other kind of things with the cruise line. So,
all right,
it's my story, and I'm sticking to it.
Denton, and then we'll do Barb after. Denton.
Yeah, thank you. I had kind of an overarching philosophy when I was on the assembly, and that was that Sitka is in competition with every other community in Southeast Alaska for attracting economic activity. And that means that we need to monitor our taxes. It means we need to monitor the amount of regulation that we impose on businesses. It means that we need to monitor our utilities and other fees that get charged here in town, because otherwise other people who may want to come here or people who may want to expand businesses in Sitka have the option of going elsewhere, and we lose out on that opportunity. And I, on a related topic, I want to applaud Megan for her willingness to make a sacrifice regarding the senior tax exemption. But with respect to seniors, we're in exactly the same situation. Seniors are on an income that's coming in from out of town, retirement incomes, Social Security, whatever. They have the ability to go any place else in the country. And having that senior tax exemption is an incentive to keep our older folks here in town rather than having them go to Arizona or Nevada or Washington or whatever. And so in addition to that competition factor, you also have the issue of keeping families together. That senior tax exemption is one of the things that keeps my 89-year-old mother here in town. And I'd like to have her continue to be here and be able to afford to continue to be here. Thanks.
All right. Thank you. Denton, if any of you want to respond to that while Emily moves the mic up, feel free to chime in. Hugh? It's Barb.
You know, I want to recall that about 50% of the total potential sales tax was not collected for one exemption or another. Is that even close? It was a really big percentage. And my personal view on it is that it should be just a straight consumption tax. Everybody pays the same thing. I think the exemptions just cause more convoluted bookkeeping, more everything, and it's a dramatic loss of revenue. And I'm close to being able to collect myself, and I'm with Megan back there. I don't plan to collect it either. So.
All right. Question from the floor, Eric.
I'm really enjoying this conversation. Thank you.
Well, especially
and
now.
I think this is really unique. We have these four. Three former administrators and none one that will be one eventually.
Maybe after tonight, huh?
You know, he ran me for mayor when I was out fishing one time, and I'm going to get him back someday. It appears to me, from my exalted view of being a fisherman and getting to contemplate the future for many hours while I'm waiting for a bite, that the number one asset we have in this community when we think about growing our economy and providing things is this place, this culture, this artistic, creative, beautiful community. And as I, with a beautiful place to live myself, and am here because of that in large part, because we could go anywhere with my fishing business and my retired wife, the biggest problem that we have right now in sharing and selling this asset with all our beautiful walking paths and a wonderful downtown and great harbors, is the cost of housing here. I think Denny and several other people have said it. Retirement people, which there's a whole bunch of us coming along here, we can go anywhere. People working on the internet with the communication systems can choose to live almost anywhere. Fishermen from around this region, I know several, including my own son, who they would love to live here if they could afford it. And they bring all that business, all that creativeness to this community. Fishermen that would much rather have their boat, their $100 to $1 million operations here, have to choose to live in places like Craig and Hoonah and Petersburg, and even put up with all those Norwegians there, because it is so expensive to buy a home here in this town. And of course, part of that is because it's such a beautiful place. But if we could free up that housing, then that is going to grow your economy. Because you have so many people now that aren't, the industrial base is gone. A lot of these things that we used to think of in terms of tourism and the timber industry, those manufacturing jobs and those service jobs are not coming back, but people who are creating and making their own jobs or have retired or who have fishing businesses where they can move their boat. If this, which is the most beautiful place in Southeast Alaska, probably the whole state of Alaska, if they can afford to come here, they will come and they will bring their economies with them. Am I striking a note here? What do you guys think of that?
I think you're absolutely correct, Eric. And the good news is Randy Huey caught me the other day and gave me a one-minute tutorial, thank you, Madam Mayor, on how he's going to create affordable housing. And I think, and I can't explain it to you, but thanks to our mayor and other people like Randy and other people I don't know, they're actually attacking that, Eric. And I think that this should be a top priority. And in the benchlands, at one time when we zoned that in a general sense, we locate a place for RVs and
trailer park.
Trailer park. Thank you, sir. And I think a nice trailer park that's well managed and with aesthetic values can also provide some opportunities for. Yeah, I think that's right. So that's a problem they've been talking about forever, and I was amazed to hear Randy tell me that he's down with an actual proposal that is going to maybe create that area. How many models he's going to have and stuff, I don't know, but I think I absolutely agree with you, my friend.
I think it's true. I think we hear a lot about taxation. There's kind of a tug of war over that. We hear about bulk water, this kind of this economic grail if commodity prices ever come around, and housing does come up, at least in my role as a journalist, as something that does seem to be at least agreed upon, universally agreed upon, as something we ought to strive for. We had a question from the floor. Hey, Barb.
Barbara Jalong. It's not a question, but one of the things that it's one of those kind of touchy things to say, but I know over the years I've been involved in many discussions where it seems like we have hired so many city workers that we have hired ourselves into some real problems. And I think that that's got to be, as you're well aware, that's got to be part of ongoing talks and that. Along with that, kind of along the same vein, is the amount of city vehicles that are on the roads. And that's something that I've been involved in conversations on that level for probably 10, 15 years. Again, maybe that's something that could really be looked at for the immediate future and the 10 years down the road future. Just a brief idea that was not mine, so I will not take credit for it. But one of the things maybe we could look at, I mean, we're a bike-friendly community now. Why couldn't we have some bicycle cops do the downtown routes and the near neighborhood routes that are, you know, constantly have cars running through them? Why not try four of those? I mean, they do it in the city where there's really lots of violence and stuff. The other thing I would like to just throw out one more time, my rah-rah for, and that is tourism. And we, without city money, there has been a dock, a deep water dock built in this town. It still seems to, in a lot of what I see and hear, have a kind of a dirty word connotation linked with it. And I've got to tell you, if we had had a dock that we could have put some ships at 8 years ago, we maybe wouldn't have lost all of our ships. But Icy Strait came in thanks to the cruise lines, and now there's a port out there that they can take ships to, and a whole lot of our Sitka ships have gone there, unfortunately. Now, boy, wouldn't it be great to get some of them back. And I just would love to have positive thoughts, positive outlook at any of the large ships that will come here, even for a couple of days a year, that will not lighter. Hopefully they will come and use this dock, and our local citizenry will promote that, and because it's a really clean resource, and it is there, and I just really hope that we can bring in a few more in the next few years. Thanks very much for your time and a lot of great ideas.
Thank you, Barb, for the observation, and I do want to, her initial question about city staffing, I am going to kick it to these guys. That is right in the strike zone of what you all do, and I'm interested in your reaction to her observation.
Certainly. It's something I hear on the streets all the time is the size of City Hall. The fact is since 2002, the city workforce has grown by 7%. We're now at about 157 employees over a 12-year period. It's not a lot of growth. The big growth in the city office has happened before that period of time, I think, maybe even before Gary's time. You'd have a better sense of that. But I've been reviewing the city workforce. I don't see at this point in time, Barbara, a lot of fat there. Maybe there's one or two positions here. We have a very, very dedicated workforce administering a very, very complex, complicated system. I see a lot of talent. I see a workforce that is at the senior level, the department heads. We have 14 department heads in the next 24 months. More than half of those people will probably retire. I think as retirements occur in our city offices, we have to look closely at are there opportunities here I think we need to ask three questions when retirements occur. Is this an essential service to the city and borough of Sitka? If yes, you go to the next question. Is this a service that we could go into partnership with the private sector and they could do it equally as well as we do or better? And then thirdly, could the private sector do it more efficiently and effectively than us? So I think in terms of how can we trim the workforce, I don't see a lot of opportunity right now without cutting to the bone and causing a disruption. But I think we have an obligation as we move forward and transitions occur to look very critically at is this an opportunity to reduce or change how we provide services.
Any of the other administrators? John Stein?
You know, with 150 or so folks working for the city, if you list off all of the functions that go on under the municipal government, I mean from the ground up, sewer, water, storm drainage, animal control, police, fire, EMS, hospital, road grading and road maintenance, parks and recreation, planning, finance, it's a huge enterprise here, and to run it with 150 people is really doing pretty good. As far as vehicles on the road, I'm hoping those guys are going from one place to the other to do something, but I mean I'm glad to see city employees out there and working, and I really appreciate the amount of work that they do. One thing, I was in social services for a while, and one of my mentors who worked for the state of Alaska says, if your organization is stressed under normal circumstances, when you have extraordinary circumstances, you won't be able to meet the challenge. And it's like when the lights go off, you want that reserve, you want those linemen to be ready to go out there and restore power in a couple of hours. When you've got a water line break, you want people available to go out there and big machinery to come in and fix that. If you're down to the bone where you don't have those folks, or if somebody goes on vacation and something happens, you're in trouble. We're not 10 miles away from some other community. You can't call in reserves from Juneau or Ketchikan on a short-term basis. Things like police, fire, search and rescue, and that kind of thing have to depend on adequate backup so that we can respond to emergencies. So I think that's a factor you have to include when you look at employees.
All right, thanks, John.
My view is we have good city government. I think we have wonderful employees. They were when I was there. And they were, it goes back to Rocky Gutierrez and what he instilled in our people in terms of being proud to work for the government and to do a good job, and they have. Mark Gorman, one of the biggest challenges you're going to have, my friend, because you're right, when the people like Mark Buggins and Don Clute and the boys mm-hmm. retire, Mark Buggins personally saves this town probably $20,000 or $40,000 every year. It's multifaceted, and hopefully the labor unions haven't screwed that up. And I'm not being mean about there, but the problem is, when I was on the board with when they unionized, and I just said, I don't give a dang about the money. All I know is you don't come in here and try to tell us how to run our shop. You because we have people in the wastewater plant that are multifaceted rather than getting five people to do three people's jobs and so forth. But we're going to lose some incredibly talented people that are going to be hard to replace, Mark, and it's going to be a tough deal, actually. And I don't think I'm sort of with John. You might squeeze out one or two people, but I think you probably, and how you control salaries is a different issue. I mean, I think that, when I grew up, and I'm a product of the public sector, I mean, and we earned a lot less than people do now. And people will tell you, well, we need to pay a competitive wage. Well, listen, most people in the private business don't have SBS, don't have a state retirement fund, and all those. So as much as I am proud of and love our city employees, I mean, their pay scale has got to be rational in terms of the benefits they get, because the benefits are just first class, actually.
All right. Hugh Bevan, one of my first memories is, I think on my first day of work in my current job, was attending your job interview for city administrator. And I think you said that you felt that it was basically CEO of a $50 million business. And I guess staffing is a big part of that.
Unfortunately, the city and borough of Sitka can't call the Federal Reserve and have them print an extra billion like the U.S. Congress can. It's a business, and it has to balance. And so unless we can close the delta between the external and internal revenue streams, city government will get smaller.
All right. Thanks, Hugh Bevan. We're at that point in this meeting, in this broadcast, where it's time to sort of give it back to the current city administrator and see, Mark, you brought us here together. What have you learned, and what's going to happen to this information? Have you got any sort of traction in helping you go to the assembly and work on our next budget?
Well, the first takeaway is it's complex. It's not easy. And the second takeaway is we are really richly benefited from the wisdom of these guys here, their experience, and we certainly were informed well by it this evening. On some specific takeaways, on deferred maintenance, I appreciate Hugh's view is that maybe we're in better shape than we think we are. We need to take a look at that. Maybe we can stretch our road maintenance out to 30 years rather than 20 years and spread that cost out. I really like the concept that was presented this evening about shared cost of some of our deferred capital improvements, of the LIDs, of the one-third, one-third, one-third. I think we need to take a look at creative solutions. On taxes, complex issue. In 5 months I've been at the job, I've said to several people, a lot of my work is managing conflicting expectations. And that really was very much echoed this evening. We have some people saying, let's get rid of our tax exemptions, and other people saying, you can't, my mother will have to leave Sitka. And those are very real, compelling emotions, and so we have to be attentive to that, and how do we have a community dialogue around tax exemptions. We have to be cognizant of the unintended consequences of our actions when we do raise taxes. We have to define what those are and try to the best of our ability to mitigate those unintended consequences. We really have a responsibility to engage the public in a meaningful way. And I think this is really a starting point this evening, and I see this as the first of many such meetings, that we have to hear from the public and educate the public that we do have some difficult decisions ahead of us. We have to look towards more self-reliance. I think several of you spoke to the fact that we can no longer look to the state or to the feds to bail us out. In part, that has been an addiction to Alaska, that we've become addicted to the oil dollars and the federal dollars, but they're not going to be there in the future. And so I think in many regards we're way ahead of the curve in Alaska. We're beginning to grab this bull by the horns. Bulk water. We need to do everything in our power to encourage bulk water. We need to do everything in our power to stimulate the tourism industry. We need to do everything in our power to grow our economy so we don't have to tax our elders and those low-income houses who are on the margin. I loved, Eric, your comment, this place. I mean, that, for me, that sums it up. We live in an incredibly special place. In the city, we've been talking about that recently, is the Sitka factor. How do we market that Sitka factor? It's a commodity that we can exchange. Cost of housing. And we're very fortunate to have our mayor taking a leadership role in affordable housing, but that's a huge one. Many of us have children who are trying to create literally a foundation in this town, and it's tough. It's very, very tough. Unless you have parents or you've been incredibly successful in other ways, it's really hard to get that next generation of Sitkins connected to this community. And probably one of the more important takeaways that I heard this evening, it was early in the evening, was, dang it, recycle. It makes you feel good. So thank you, Gary, for that bit of wisdom. But actually, I say that a little bit in jest, but I really think that does sum up our community spirit. This is a remarkable place. We have 17 boards and commissions. We have incredible community involvement and ownership in where Sitka is going as a place, and we can capitalize that, and we will be successful. I have tremendous optimism as to where we're going. We have the energy to face the challenges. Thank you.
Thank you, Mark Gorman, current city administrator. Thank you, John Stein, Gary Paxton, Hugh Bevan, for coming out tonight and volunteering your time and thoughts to this process. We're going to wrap up our live broadcast tonight. I want to thank the audience for coming out and giving us your attention and your thoughts. You guys just blew away our betting poll, by the way. Not, we're going to have to all put the money back. Yeah,
give us your numbers. What were the numbers?
I want to thank KCIW's Winter Fellow, Emily Foreman, for working the house tonight. Our reporter, Rachel Waldholtz, for engineering. Rebecca LaGuire has been back in the studio all evening monitoring this broadcast. And also, I want to thank the Centennial Building staff. They just make it look easy. We just all showed up, and it was all set up here and ready to go. Raven Radio's next special live news program will be Wednesday, March 12th at 10 a.m. We're going to have a call-in program with Andrea Thomas, who will be available to answer your questions about enrolling for insurance under the provisions of the Affordable Care Act, and which is also known as Obamacare. And an open enrollment period for the Affordable Care Act ends on March 31st. So it's important for all Sitkans who don't currently have insurance to get information on that. You've been listening to a live town hall meeting on Making Our Money Work Better in Sitka from Harrigan Centennial Hall over Raven Radio, KCAW in Sitka. I'm Robert Woolsey. Thanks very much for joining us this evening, and have a great evening.
Thank you, Rob. Thank you.